This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
5 a.m., I'm up with a crisp Celsius energy drink. Running 12 miles today. Grab a green juice, quick change, and head to work. Meetings, workshops, one more Celsius, no slowing down. Working late, but obviously still meeting the girls for a little dancing. Celsius. Live. Fit. Go. Grab a cold, refreshing Celsius at your local retailer or locate now at Celsius.com.
Close your eyes. Exhale. Feel your body relax and let go of whatever you're carrying today.
Well, I'm letting go of the worry that I wouldn't get my new contacts in time for this class. I got them delivered free from 1-800-CONTACTS. Oh my gosh, they're so fast.
And breathe.
Oh, sorry. I almost couldn't breathe when I saw the discount they gave me on my first order. Oh, sorry. Namaste.
Visit 1-800-CONTACTS.com today to save on your first order.
1-800-CONTACTS.
New year, new me? Cute. But how about new year, new money? With Experian, you can actually take control of your finances. Check your FICO score, find ways to save, and get matched with credit card offers, giving you time to power through those New Year's goals you know you're going to crush. Start the year off right. Download the Experian app. Based on FICO scoring model. Offers and approval not guaranteed. Eligibility requirements and terms apply. Subject to credit check, which may impact your credit scores. Offers not available in all states. See Experian.com for details. Experian.
Ready to relax in your dream bath retreat without the stress of figuring out every detail yourself? At the Home Depot, your bath upgrade is covered. Shop fully designed rooms and curated bath collections to go from inspiration to transformation fast. Savings of up to 40% will make it easier on your budget. And find everything you need, from tubs to toilets and all the tile in between, to bring your vision to life. The Home Depot. Dream baths built here.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the How to Hunt Turkey podcast. I'm your host, Jace Greer. This week, I have Bjorn Wilkerson with me. He went out this year, killed both of his Missouri birds on public land. He is a land agent for Midwest Land Group. He's a bow fisherman. He's a deer hunter. We actually met when we were both going after the same gigantic buck, which I ended up shooting next year, and he's been crazy cool about it the whole time. He's got one of the deer antlers and I've got the deer on my wall, and we've never seen the other part. We haven't seen each other in person since we were hunting that deer. So anyways, it's good to get a chance to catch up with him and to talk about his turkey season. So Bjorn, going out there killing your birds on public land, I'm sure you have access to other ground like private land and stuff. So what made you want to go out and get both your birds on public land this year?
Yeah, man. I mean, first of all, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for being.
This is a cool thing to do, and it's always fun to talk hunting with somebody. But, I mean, there's a bunch of different reasons, but to be quite honest with you, convenience, which is counterintuitive when it comes to public land, but where I'm at here in Ozark, a lot of the private ground that I had access to by you, you know, was about an hour, hour and a half, depending on where you're going. which when I was younger and single and, you know, had less going on, I'm like, man, I wake up at 3 a.m. That's no big deal. But, you know, as you get married, have kids and you get rolling in your career a little more, you know, that extra hour of sleep going back and forth, trying to get home, it means a lot. So just over the years, as I started making that transition, I just started scouting a little bit of the public that's close to here, a lot of the Mark Twain National Forest. Some of it's 20 minutes. And so just kind of thinking about that, being like, man, I could really be more efficient with my time to help me, my family, my job. So I started hunting it 3 or 4 years ago, pretty unsuccessfully.
Uh-huh.
But as the years come on, you know, you kind of start to figure it out. And now, honestly, it's what I love doing most. It's a challenge, and it's fun to kill turkey no matter where you're at. But,
sure,
you know, public land kind of has that little bit of, a little bit of extra for me anyway.
Yeah, I love how you answered that question real honestly. You didn't give me some BS about like, oh, it's more this and this. You're like, it's close to the house. Sometimes it doesn't have to be such a big, like, lofty, you know, almost holy thing. It can just be a matter of convenience. I know for me, for turkey season, I really do try to cap it at 20 minutes if I can, especially if you're going to go out and hunt like every day, which I know you probably pretty much did. And man, like those early mornings in the turkey woods, an extra 45 minutes is like life or death almost.
when you're grinding it out, like you have to a lot of times. I mean, again, when you're 21 years old, maybe it's a little easier, but I'm not an old man by any means, but when you get older and again, you have to apply your energy to family and your work, you know, after you get done hunting, like it does matter after 3, 4, 5 days, especially in the Mark Twain, you know, it's not like you're hunting level pasture ground. It's mountains and you're working. So it definitely does make a difference just again, from an efficiency standpoint.
Yeah. So let's break that down a little bit. So it's different terrain. Describe a little bit kind of what it looks like and what's sort of your overarching idea? Like, are you trying to cover tons of ground? Are you going to certain spots? Are you looking for sign? What's like step one? You're coming into public land that you've never hunted before.
Yeah. I mean, the Mark Twain National Forest in Southern Missouri, I mean, it's the Ozark Mountains, you know, it's steep. I mean, there's some things you can't even walk down. So, you know, there's all sorts of different topography in the Ozarks, if the people listening aren't familiar, but, you know, you can have long ridge tops, you know, and deep gullies. And so it's kind of a mixed bag, but to be quite honest with you, I wasn't really good at hunting public land at all. And I'll give THP, you know, the hunting public some credit. Started watching them. I'm like, man, okay. Like there's a way to do it. If they can do it, I can too. And so kind of that time frame where I told you I was leaving the public or the private ground and hunting public, I was kind of using what they had mentioned in some of their episodes about what to look for. And then I applied it where I was going, and some of it worked, some of it didn't. But I guess to answer your question, e-scouting is obviously where you got to start.
Mm-hmm.
So you just look at, I mean, there's tens of thousands of acres just right around here of Mark Twain National Forest. And that's not including Corps of Engineer ground and some other MDC ground. So there's a lot to look at. But what I started to notice after all of the years of trial and error is obviously for turkeys, you got to have water. So anywhere you can find consistent water is always a good place to start. And then any type of diverse habitat. So with Mark Twain, it's mainly just vast forest. And so it is hard, even if there is some water, there's still water for miles in that creek and trees along that. So you still have to find some commonalities, and you know, it's that diverse habitat, usually pasture. You know, if it butts up to private or whatever, try to hone in on those areas, and more times than not you'll hear a turkey in those areas.
Awesome. So when you're out there, do you do a lot of listening, like trying to find them on the roost gobbling at night? Do you go in the morning? If you're not on a bird, are you listening? What do you do a lot with just listening for gobblers, or do you more move around and try and find them?
I mean, it kind of depends on the day, but to be quite honest, I'm starting to deer hunt it a lot more too.
Okay.
And so I'm looking for turkey scratch, and then for one to tell me, okay, there's at least turkeys in the area. Now the range is likely going to be a little different, but it's still like, okay, checkbox, there's turkeys around here, right? You know, so I always drop a pin while I'm deer hunting, file that for the spring. And so when I come back around to the spring, I start to think, okay, like I did see turkeys here. I don't really go listen, just again, from an efficiency standpoint, family time. I don't really go roost a lot. I really don't go try to listen early in the mornings before season. That probably would help your first year,
Oh, sure.
Just to try to pin some things down. But I've done it long enough now to where I'm pretty confident when I zero in on an area e-scouting that I'll be able to hear a turkey. And so I've just gotten efficient enough now to recognize those areas. And I have six or seven areas now that I know there are turkeys. So I guess to answer your question, it's more or less the e-scouting and being pretty confident in those things that I told you to begin this with, that I know there's probably turkeys there. Now, it takes you a while e-scouting to find those things, to be honest. Again, you're tens of thousands of acres, and there just may be a little finger ridge that you notice is pasture, and you realize you can walk 45 minutes around a corner to get there, which is where I had a buddy actually kill a bird in that situation. So, again, it sounds easy, but when you start applying it, looking through all of that, driving to it, hiking in 45 minutes, you quickly realize, okay, this is a little bit harder.
I don't know how many times I've been e-scouting and I'm like, here's a legendary spot. Here's an incredible spot. Probably a triple bearded bird here, looking incredible, looking great. And you get there and you're like, so this is a sheer cliff and I forgot to turn the topo map on and check that. And I mean, stuff like that happens to me all the time. So yeah, I totally get what you're saying. Like, it all seems easy from the couch, right? And you just got to get out there and go, oh, so this is what this looks like when you're actually there. And you kind of, you hone your game plan to that. So when you're going in, so since you're not going out and listening, I'm assuming most mornings you're starting without a bird roosted. Are you going to spots that you know they roost in from historical knowledge? Or what's your strategy like going in the morning without a bird roosted?
Yeah. Man, I'm just really careful. playing off general knowledge, I mean, turkeys, they like to roost over close to water. They like to roost on points, or, you know, they like to roost 100, 200 yards, sometimes closer to pasture edges, you know, so you kind of get a feel of like, okay, there may be a bird here. And when you're going in blind like that, you just got to know like, hey, man, there may be a bird 100 yards or maybe 500 yards off, but at least you're there and you hear one. So I'm always just really careful. I either get in there super early and just sit and get quiet in case there is one close, or I'm not very invasive and I'll park and get really high elevation, just walk in a little bit and just be like, man, I'll just wait, sit here until I hear one. You know, if it's a couple hundred yards, it's a couple hundred yards, you know, you're out there at noon, you got time, you know? So I try to just calm down and just, you know, we'll find them. If we don't, we'll sit here for 30 minutes and I'm close enough to the truck. Since I didn't bail in there, we'll go try another spot.
Nice. I like that, 'cause you leave your options open so that if you missed big, you can get out easy. You know, you're not doing like a 5-mile death march on an unknown spot first time or whatever. And I think that that would be my tendency, because I'm always doing that when I'm fishing. Like if I'm like, oh, here's a new spot. And back in the day when I used to only kayak fish, and I would be like, all right, we're going to paddle 3 miles and then start fishing. And I think sometimes it might be good to work your way in a little bit. So you're going to stay on the edge, you're going to listen, you're going to be quiet, maybe you'll move in. So let's imagine fly down happens, and you've heard them gobble, but you kind of hear them move off, they go quiet. What are you doing next on public land?
I mean, it just depends on, in that situation, I'm thinking, okay, they've went quiet, they've either got hens, or honestly, in the Mark Twain, man, they could have went over a ridgetop, and they still may be gobbling, you can't hear them. So it's always important to stay high for that reason. Or be on the end of a point to where you can at least hear, you know, close to 360 or at least everything out in front of you, because their volume changes so much as the topography rolls. But, you know, if I'm tracking one and I hear it go silent, I mean, that usually tells me that there's hens there and then I'm going to have to really hang in there and let them fire up later after the hens leave. Or I'll try to loop around if I know they're going to a pasture to maybe try to cut them off. But the run and gun type that I do, if they shut up for too long, man, I'm usually backing out and going after another one.
I gotcha. Interesting. So you don't necessarily go after the one that's gone quiet. You might just switch gears entirely?
More times than not. And it depends on how comfortable I am with that spot too. You know, if I'm really confident on what the birds are doing, I'm confident on how they move, you know, or I know they're going to go through this point, or I know they're going to this spot, you know, I'll wait them out and I'll get in there and see if I can't, you know, call them off the hens, or maybe there's another bird, satellite bird that hasn't gobbled yet. So I don't give up just immediately, but you kind of just learn to get a sense of like, okay, I've been here an hour. They haven't said anything. I haven't heard anything else. time is limited. The season's not that long.
Right.
You know, you start to have that battle of like, you know, do I remain patient or do I go find a hot one?
No, absolutely, man. I think that's the thing. Like I was talking to a buddy just the other day and we were definitely realizing the Missouri turkey season is just not long enough, which I mean, from a biological standpoint and stuff, yes, it's all good. It's just like when you compare it to how long you have to chase whitetails, turkey season is such a flash in the pan. There's just not enough time. And we're like, man, we got to start traveling and stuff. But I think that's a good idea. It's like, don't ride a dead program when you got a short season. Like you need to get moving and you kind of learn how much you need to be moving and when. So you come in the morning, do you mostly like for that first hour or two, do you just get in a spot and stay still? Or do you move along? Like, do you move around in that first hour or two of daylight?
Yeah, I mean, it's which everything in turkey hunting is situational, but
right.
If it's a new spot and I don't hear one, especially at daybreak, I'm moving.
Yeah.
Now I'm not running through the woods, but you know, I'm going to the next ridge top, or I try to walk like 100 yards. You know, I'll start scratching and I'll do some soft calling. Never know when something fires up, but I'll do that till my point of reference. You know, and then if I've scratched and I've called and I've listened and I've hit all my spots and I still don't hear anything, that's when I'm starting to have that conversation of like, okay, is there turkeys in here? Or if there are, you know, is it worth my time?
Yeah.
Now, if I am confident in that spot and I know there's turkeys, then I'll also have that conversation and be like, okay, I know they're here. You know, maybe it's a quiet morning. You know how they can be off sometimes. You know, let's just hang in here at least till 9 o'clock. Because sometimes late day, you know, gobblers are the best ones to go after. So there are times where I've just hung in there tight and it's paid off, but it is hard.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally get that. And I think, man, this year it was more off days than not for me. It was so hot. It was like, man, you just weren't hearing the gobbles like you want to. And you had to kind of work for it some. So I know that down there around where you're talking about that Mark Twain stuff, a lot of it can be real segmented. Or are you running on like big chunks of public?
I mean, a little bit of both, but yeah. the big swaths of the public land is the easiest to identify for most people because mm-hmm. we haven't talked about it, but obviously people is one of the biggest factors when it comes to hunting public. So you quickly learn that the big chunks that, you know, are just kind of easily accessible, but you know, you can park and go any which direction are pretty popular.
Yeah.
So, which I did, I mean, I killed my first bird in that exact spot this year. So I'm not mm-hmm. saying it's a write-off, but after your first 4 or 5 days, man, those birds are educated.
Yeah.
'Cause I went back to that spot and each time there was probably 5 or 6 trucks within a mile along that road.
Mm.
There's birds in there, but I mean, they got educated real quick. So, yeah, you just gotta, you gotta hit those spots early, in my opinion. And then your second week or your second bird, or even your first one, if you haven't killed one in those spots, you got to start looking at the overlooked spots, the more difficult spots, which is usually the ticket, you know.
Yeah.
It's walking down the ridge and up a really steep one to get to a pasture piece, you know, 45 minutes in that most people aren't going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the unfortunate part of the thing you got to do, but you get used to it, you know, and you got to realize like, hey, this isn't going to be easy. So you got to do what other people aren't willing to do to get your turkey sometimes.
Yeah, that's the truth. Either what they're unwilling to do or what they don't think to do. And I think that, you know, going into a giant piece where you got 5,000 acres, it's like, all right, I passed this line and I can shut my brain off and just hunt. And there's a lot of appeal to that, I think. But skirting around on those edges, you're going to be in spots that people might not think to have hunted. And I think that could be a good strategy for sure. So how much do you bump around in a day on average? I know, like we've already said, everything is situational, but are you hitting a bunch of small pieces or are you hitting a spot that's big enough that when you do move around after those couple hours, it's on the same piece?
Yeah. Unfortunately, I'm probably bumping around on an unsuccessful day, 3 to 4 times. But the reason I would do it more, but the reason it's 3 or 4 times is because each spot's going to be about 30 to 40 minutes,
mm-hmm.
You know? And so that's where I was telling you that conversation gets had pretty quick about like, okay, am I hanging in here or am I not? Because if I'm not, I'm about to waste another 45 minutes getting to the next spot. So that's right. You kind of got to be decisive in your decisions in that way. But I mean, I still hop around all the way till 1 o'clock. You know, I've identified spots where people had hunted that morning, but I've went back in there after everybody's left and I've killed a hot bird at noon, you know? So there's also that to think about too, where you may hit some spots that are off the beaten path, for lack of a better term, let all the hunters go in, hopefully be unsuccessful. And then I just know that most people, if they're not successful by 9 or 10 o'clock, they're going to eat breakfast. And so I've killed two birds slipping into where there's always 3 or 4 trucks slipped in there later in the day and killed a turkey. So there's a little bit of strategy in how you hop around as well, and kind of having those things in your head, like, okay, I'm going to go here. If this one doesn't work out, it helps.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a great strategy. So do you do anything different for those, I don't know, second shift birds, like with your calling, knowing that they've been kind of messed with all morning? Do you come in and play it safe, or do you come in and think like, hey, they know everybody left and now they're just going crazy?
My experience is if on, especially on public or even private, really, I mean, if there's a turkey gobbling at 10, 11, 12 o'clock, your chances are pretty dang high. You know, that usually means the hens have left, he's in the mood, and it always seems to work out really good when you can strike them late in the day. Not every time, no, nothing's guaranteed, but usually if you hear one, you know, hammer at that time, I'm getting pretty excited because it's like, okay, it's just always a good situation to be in. So not that I go in there just calling like crazy, but you know, I'm not scared to be a little aggressive and get him even more excited.
Yeah. I think those
birds for that reason.
Yeah. I think people don't talk much about how rare it is to find a bird gobbling after, you know, 2 hours of sunlight. I mean, I've had it happen like not very many times. I would hesitate to put a number to it, but I mean, it is very rare. Like, you don't find that every day unless you're covering just ridiculous amounts of ground. At least I feel like that. So like when you're out on public land and stuff, like how often are you finding a midday gobbler?
Multiple times a year.
Yeah,
probably. But again, my experience down here is, yeah, all your gobbling is going to be 2 hours after sunrise, you know, after they put down, sometimes only an hour, hour and a half.
Yep.
And then there's just always a lull where people, you know, that 8 to 10, 8 to 10:30, where people are done. Either they got to go to work or they're just done in general. You know, like to your point, you're not hearing turkeys everywhere at 11 o'clock. Mm-hmm. So it's really not worth it to some people. But I guess just in my experience, you know, I've just been in a random place trying to place out down in a creek bottom, going to take a nap at noon and had one hammer and be like, oh my gosh, like, you know, this isn't as uncommon as people think, but you got to be out there to hear them and you got to do it enough times to realize that, okay, this does happen. You know, no, it's not going to happen every time you go out. So it's easy to kind of write it off. But if you go 3 or 4 times in a good spot, you'll get one fired up. And so I just keep that in the back of my head when I'm going to those spots later in the day that, hey, this happens every year. You know, just be patient. If you keep going out at this time, you'll hear one.
Yeah, I like it. So do you ever carry a decoy with you, or do you do sort of minimalist run and gun?
Minimalist, man. Again, it is hard in these mountains down here. And well, I will say that we took a decoy one time this year with a buddy. I was trying to get him his first Mark Twain bird, and he likes to use decoys. And we were in a pretty heavily hunted area. I think it was the third day of season that we went in there. The day before, midday, bouncing around, I'm like, dude, there's a big pasture here. It's against a big portion of this Mark Twain. I know there's people in there, but let's just go try it. And we struck 3 birds within an hour at about 11:30.
Wow.
So I'm like, but the first bird we struck, he was probably 150 yards, and we set the decoy on the inside of the fence in the woods, in the shadows. I mean, it was perfect. And that as soon as that gobbler saw that decoy, I mean, he shut down, went back to the hens. And it's just situations like that where I'm like, I'm not a decoy person. I mean, I've got the Avian X's. I've got all the nice decoys, but they always sit in my garage. You know, I've just in the mountains, I like to call it periscoping. I mean, those gobblers, they know there's something supposed to be there. And I just, they periscope, man. And they can't see something. They hang around there longer. And I've just had better luck making them wonder and look a little bit more, you know. We've all seen the YouTube videos of a gobbler beating the Jake decoy up. And that's just never been my experience. It's been a putt and a run every time. So I just run and gun, and it's less to worry about, less to think about. And I've just, it's worked for me.
Yeah, less to think about from a decoy standpoint, but I'm sure more to think about as far as calling a bird in. Like, if you're trying to call a bird in and you don't have a decoy, you've probably got to put a little more thought into your setup, right? So what do you kind of do for that? Do you just try to get where they're going to have to crest a hill to see you, or do you get in somewhere thick? What's your strategy there?
Both. I mean, you're exactly right on both of those. Yeah, it's if a turkey has a long line of sight, especially down here on the public ground or really any public ground, they know. I mean, they'll come. They'll if they don't see anything, they're going to start getting nervous. So yeah, I always try to position myself, especially in the hills, to where I'm up on a flat, you know, where they're going to come up and they're going to look, and then, you know, and that's your time to shoot. So usually at least 60 yards off that crest. Or like you said, in a brushy situation, you know, along that edge or something where they have to come around, but you got to have something there. Cause if it's just monotonous open timber, they can see 100, 200 yards to that stuff. And they're not just going to come barreling through there when they know they're supposed to be a turkey.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that it's hard for us as humans to give up the sight advantage. Cause I think we're such visual creatures. And I know, like, happens to me whitetail hunting all the time. I know that if I'll get in somewhere where I can only see 50 yards, that's where the deer I'm after is probably going to be. But I want to be able to see 300 yards and come home and be like, yeah, I saw 10 deer. They were all running and at 300 yards, but I saw 10 deer. And I think there is just this natural tendency to want to see, and you got to kind of fight that. And I'm sure by now, as long as you've been turkey hunting, it's just instinctive. You might start to feel the opposite, where if you can see too good, you probably feel uncomfortable about it. You're like, man, this doesn't feel right. But I think to a new hunter, it would feel weird getting in somewhere you can't really see.
That's 1,000% true. I mean, I'm thinking of an instance. So the second week, that the first spot I killed my turkey in, I was struggling that second week. I mean, it was 20,000 steps a day, man. I just could not get away from people. My other spots just weren't working out. They were hinned up or rain. It seemed like it was raining all the time. So I went back to that spot and there was turkeys out there. But a portion of that pasture is public. And of course, another hunter just comes walking right up the edge of that public, you know, and I'm back in the woods like you're supposed to be. You know, you can't really see much, but I know there's a turkey out there, and I'm just, you know, really hanging back and being patient. And that's just the differences between, you know, mindsets and experiences. Just like you said, if you're in an area where you can see everything, well, a turkey can see you, you know, 10 times as far. And so you're already busted, in my opinion. So you got to, if I see a field, man, I'm literally getting down, I'm looking, and I'm just, you know, looking through the branches. I'm not walking up to the fence row and looking around, because then it's too late. You know what I mean? So you do have to get rid of the instant gratification, for lack of a better term, of, oh, let's see if anything out here, you know, hang back, soft call a little bit. I always really like to scratch in the leaves, act really natural. I don't go in there blowing a box call and acting super aggressive, thinking that something's going to fire up. It's always worked really well for me to soft call, scratch around, kind of act non-interested, a non-interested hen that's just doing her thing. That's how we struck all those birds. But you definitely have to get rid of that. I mean, you have to have patience, as we all know. So, not blown into a spot, just trying to see everything. It's being patient.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I think that's so true, because I don't know how many times I've walked into a field and spooked a turkey. I was actually just walking down on my grandpa's place yesterday, just walking around, looking at it, and I ended up spooking a hen out of the edge of the field, and I know she was standing. She was standing, I mean, feet from where I shot my bird earlier this year. I mean, they were in that same, there's just a little hill in this field, and they like to get on that, and I busted her out of there, and I thought, man, I kind of thought I was walking in this field looking for birds, because I knew there were birds there, but I did get distracted by a log that had gotten washed into the field. And I think that's why I didn't notice her slip into the woods. But man, that I hesitate to know how many turkeys have slipped out while I've been what I thought was slipping in, and I haven't been. But I like that idea of coming in and calling before you can see, or trying to look through limbs and stuff, because that puts you in a position to actually get the bird instead of see the bird. And I'd sure rather get them than see them.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it's, some people don't like to call in that situation because you can't have a bird slip in silent on you. You know, that's obviously a risk you run. But in my experience, you know, later in the day or approaching a field, if a turkey's out there and you're calling, more times than not, you'll get an answer. So I always kind of like to run that risk. But when I'm calling too, you know, I'm not out there doing cartwheels and stuff. You know, I'm still being quiet. I'm still looking. And so you're just always using your eyes and ears as you're calling and doing all that stuff to make sure you don't see anything coming through, or you're also listening through the woods to see if you can hear anything as well. So you're always just cognizant of what you're doing all the time and listening and looking for all the signs while you're doing it.
Yeah.
That lack of patience that we're talking about has got me in so much trouble. Mm-hmm. As far as just busting birds, you know, you're frustrated or you're anxious, you're trying to get something and you're not taking your time. You're not paying attention to everything. And next thing you know, you're in a position where you went in too aggressive, or you went in too fast, or you went into this hole where a turkey can see you through the pasture. And so there's a bunch of different scenarios in there that you just go, I always have to just be like, okay, let's just slow down. You don't have to get there now. Let's try it here. You know, then go another 50 yards. Okay, let's try it again. And just be really methodical, you know, just be careful in that way, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's really good. Because one thing I've noticed is every run and gun hunter that I've talked to, there is this like paradox of, you want to move and you want to find the bird, but you want to be really slow and watch what you're doing and be in nature. And I think that it's harder to be patient when you're moving than just to sit still. Because if you're sitting still, you're just sitting still. But to move with patience, that takes an amount of mental discipline that I certainly do not always show. I'll get out there and I'll start out good. I'll crawl into that first field and I'll round the corner and I'll blow my locator, or I'll, you know, whatever it is, I'll bring up my binos. And then by like the 10th field of the day I'm going through, I'm just walking right through it. And I think to myself, wait a minute, what am I doing? Because, like, you know, you start to work up a sweat or whatever, you start to get a little tired, and you're like, wait, I should not be moving fast enough to be sweating. Like, really? I mean, of course, I sweat at the drop of a hat, so I'm just always sweating. But I think there's something to that. Like you're saying, is when you're moving into those fields, you do have to be really calculated with your movements. And I think that...
Well, you just got to remember the feeling when you're not patient and you bust a bird. Like, I always, you know, because that's the, like, you basically just wasted the whole day, you know, or wasted that opportunity. And it's, I just always remember being so frustrated, like, man, this is so hard. And that was an opportunity that you could have had if you just would have slowed down, you know?
Yeah.
And I just, in those situations, I always think back, like, okay, remember, like, that's happened before. So it's going to take you an extra 20 minutes here. And it's maybe it, nothing comes out of it, but you don't want to feel that way again. So let's do what we can not to get in that situation. And that always helps me, because yeah, when you bust a bird or you do something stupid, man, I beat myself up probably too much, but you know, self-criticism is okay once in a while.
Well, you got to remember it somehow, right? So, you know, if it didn't already feel bad enough to miss out on that bird, you gotta supplement it a little sometimes.
Well, yeah. And you know, public, you know, private, wherever. I mean, most of the time you got to work pretty dang hard, mm-hmm. you know, to get in, you know, the vicinity of a bird or have an opportunity. So, I mean, it hurts to kind of let one fly.
Oh, man. Absolutely. Especially if, you know, like you're saying, if you're working real hard. So let's break down your hunts this year. You know, you've got two birds this year. One thing I find is really helpful is breaking down successful hunts, because we all know the rules. We all know that you do this, you do that. You don't do this, you do this. You go try this, you go try that. But a lot of times I find that a successful hunt always consists of a really strange mixture of, like, well, it's kind of like these tactics that I learned from this thing, and also I had to do this to get this bird. And I find that, like, each bird you're successful on requires something a little more nuanced than just like a general do this and it'll work. So let's dive in. So your first bird this year, how far into season were you when you got it?
It was in the latter portion of the first week. So I had bounced around a couple places. Well, my number one spot I went to, and I even scouted it a little bit, and all I saw was a couple of jakes. Mm. And I was really disappointed, because I've killed birds there 2 years in a row. It's kind of popular, but it was one of those places where I knew good enough that I was confident that I could slip in there, especially later in the day. It's one of those spots where everybody leaves. And 2 years in a row, I've killed them at about 11 or noon. So after a couple of days there, I realized, man, talking to a few people, there's just no turkeys in there this year. So after that, I was like, I kind of burned a couple of days. And at that point in time, one of my friends who I was told he was hunting with me was starting to bounce around with me too, because he's been really wanting to learn. And so we bounced around a couple places. And that that big pasture spot I told you about, the Mark Twain backs up to, I don't know, it's like 600 or 800 acres of pretty much pasture cattle ground that apparently nobody hunts. But I'm like, man, this is a spot. We need to just need to go look at it. It's 11 o'clock. I'm sure nobody's in there. Let's just go scout it. And sure enough, we struck three birds that day. None of them worked out. One of them saw the decoy. Other one stayed hung up out there. And then the third one actually pulled a circle on us silently and caught him trying to move. But I was like, okay, there's birds in here. At the time, I'm like, dude, there's no trucks. This, we may be in a honey hole here, you know? So I was like, let's come back. And so the next morning we did. Now, we didn't roost them, and I wish we would have, but nonetheless, we went back and we worked down the spine of a ridge that, you know, there's three ridge tops, almost like a turkey foot, and they all lead down to that pasture. And we were on that middle spine because there were trucks down to the left on that other ridge. So I'm like, well, here we go. So we'll just work down to where we saw all the turkey scratch and where we thought that they would be roosted. Well, as soon as we stopped on that ridge, we were still 300 or 400 yards from that pasture edge. And we're just like, well, let's just, we have no idea where these things are at. Let's just stop here and listen. And sure enough, as soon as we set the gun against the tree, there was a turkey that gobbled probably 50 yards in the tree. And we were both like, well, this isn't going to work. And so he went and sat down. There were some other birds that were gobbling probably 300 yards kind of down the hill closer to the pasture. And he's like, man, I'll sit here just in case. He's like, but this thing's probably already busted us. And I'm like, yeah, I agree. He's like, I'll sit here. He's like, you go after that other one. I'm like, okay. So I slipped down, just trying to get closer and closer. And of course, by the time I get close, it was pitch down time, and they had pitched down into that pasture, which is private. So I'm like, well, typically the way it works with public grounds, once they get on the private, they're not coming back, you know, especially after they've been educated for 4 or 5 days, it seemed like. But I'm like, well, he's gobbling pretty good. He was answering my calls. Again, I wasn't doing anything crazy. I just had my slate. Just calling, he'd answer. But I could tell he was staying on the other side of the fence. And so I kept working down that side ridge, getting close enough to where I was getting kind of nervous about, you know, him potentially seeing me if he was close up to the fence. I'm like, I just need to stop, you know, patience thing again. Let's just stop. Let's figure this out. And there was a fallen down tree that I was like, I need to stand behind here, which a lot of people don't like to stand when they shoot a turkey, but for whatever reason, I've had success doing it, because turkeys in the mountains and in the woods, they don't come straight at you. So if you're sitting on a tree, they're not coming down your barrel. You know, they're usually coming a weird way. They always catch you. They're always working the ridge top and coming over. They're always finding a weird vantage point that I can never put my finger on. And I've been in some tough situations that way. So again, that treetop, you know, was in front of me and gave me like 180s of cover, and I could stand there. I'm like, I'm just going to stand where I can see, well, anywhere this bird's going to come from. I'm just going to be patient and see what happens. And so instead of getting really aggressive, which I feel like a lot of maybe new hunters would do, you know, trying to get them fired up, trying to get them to run in, you know, do the TV thing. I just did what I was telling you earlier. I was just scratching. You know, I kind of worked my way behind that tree, you know, kind of acted like I was meandering around, just scratching with my foot, you know, just doing soft yelps, clucks, putts, purrs, a lot of purring. Really, I like to do that in that situation. You know, kind of acted uninterested, but when he would gobble, you know, I'd cut him off sometimes, just kind of let him know I was there. I wasn't coming to him. I was out there feeding, kind of deal. And sure enough, it was probably a really good morning for him too, but he finally broke. And the last time I heard him gobble, I'm like, oh, he's at the fence. So I just got my gun ready, and sure enough, I saw him, and he actually did come down my barrel that time.
Of course.
Kept coming. And of course I just shut up at that point, which you need to do, because they need to look for you. You know, if they pinpoint you in that situation, they're going to stop and wait to see you. So I just kind of let him keep coming and kept coming. He was gobbling and looking for me. And finally he got about 30 yards, and that's all it took. So yeah. it was kind of in that sense, like, picture perfect on how it worked out. It was a lot of fun. You got to play the game.
Yeah. So when you're calling to a bird like that and you don't want them to pinpoint you, are you doing more clucks and purrs, or are you doing long yelping sequences? What kind of calling are you doing?
Yeah. Again, in that situation and in public, I just feel like a lot of people go in there just calling loud and aggressive, you know, again, trying to get them fired up and crazy. And I like to play the, you know, I'm the hen on this hillside scratching. I'm answering you. I'm interested, but you know, I'm not busting out in that pasture either, you know? So I just try to play that game. And then when I hear him break, And in that instance, when I heard him break and cross under the fence, like, I knew he was committed. And at that point in time, I just shut up completely because it almost makes him, you know, not mad, but it makes him like, hey, what in the world? You know, we've been talking this whole time and now I don't know where you're at. I know you're in here. You know what I mean? I just kind of play that shut up game to where they have to, you know, kind of come and look for you. Because if I would have kept calling, he may have stopped again and gobbled and be like, hey, I've came this far. You need to come this far. Mm-hmm. You know, I just like the shut up, man. And you could just see it. You know, he was bobbing and weaving through the trees, looking, trying to find me, and finally worked up close enough in that timber where I got a shot. So, in that instance, I kind of like to play it cool, do what not a lot of people do to get them interested.
Yeah.
And then not call at all.
Yeah. It reminds me of this, this thing that I've heard about before is like the harder somebody has to work to get information, the higher value it has in their brain. So like sometimes if you want people to think a certain thing, you don't want to spell it out exactly. You want them to have to figure it out because it means more to them. Just like how if you're the one who spooks the bird, you remember that better than if your buddy tells you about a bird he spooked, you know, because you had to pay more to get that knowledge. So it means more to you. And I think with calling in turkeys, if you're doing soft calling and you're scratching in the leaves, that turkey, now this is some anthropomorphizing for sure, but I imagine that turkey must be thinking like, oh, see, she's not trying too hard to get me. She's being quiet. She's being over there. But I'm smart enough to know and I'll go in. And I think there's something to that, what you're saying. So I love that idea of soft calling and scratching. And man, fascinating idea about standing up. Because also, I mean, that's going to like, what, triple your view probably of being able to see stuff? Because, man, the second you sit down, you can't see anything. So that's probably a big advantage of you because then you get to be somewhere where they have to come looking for you, but you still have that advantage because we are taller than turkeys. So there is that.
Yeah. Well, and it's always in a position. I only do it if it's ironclad. You know, I'm not standing in front of an oak tree, you know, just willy-nilly. I mean, I'm usually standing behind a tree with some type of fall, you know, a dead tree or you know, brush or whatever, to where I am covered, you know, from the neck down. There's no way they're seeing me. And even then I'm halfway behind a tree, you know, kind of looking around with a face mask, you know. And so if you see them, you can kind of like get behind the tree and kind of get ready if your gun's not already up, you know, and then be able to come around. So it's risky, but I also think there's, you know, it's pretty advantageous in the right situation too.
Absolutely.
If I would have sat in front of that tree, that turkey probably would have walked right down my barrel. But, you know, if he could have went way left and I would have been able to swing. You know, it leaves your options open, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. And they can't see through trees no matter how hard they try. So, right. So how thick is this patch of woods that you're in? Because this is something I constantly get into. I walk into the woods and a lot of the woods where I hunt is covered in multiple rows. And I just assume no turkey's ever going to be in here. But what are you kind of like, if you're trying to call a bird into the woods, are you looking for more open? Like, what basically do you look at and say, hey, there's no point in even trying to get them to come in here? And what's kind of a green light for you?
Yeah. I mean, the woods, the Mark Twain obviously hasn't been logged, you know, so a majority of it is just open, mature forest where you can see 100 yards. And so that's why I said that the topography plays such a big role in those situations, because, you know, a turkey, you know, prefers certain things when looking for a hen, you know what I mean? So this turkey actually kind of side hilled. So he came from the downhill side and then kind of got parallel and kind of worked down the side hill, which typically they like to come in on the high side, or they like to try to work around a point and get level with you. And they like to do some quirky things, but you know, it's the habitat necessarily is pretty monotonous in those situations. And so it kind of just depends on where the turkey's at. Again, it's all pretty situational and given what the diversity of the habitat is. But I can't really think that when I'm looking, I'm like, okay, this looks like I'm, you know, I usually, if they're gobbling, I try to get, you know, within 100 yards of them and get in a position where I can shoot almost 360, you know, or 180 degrees, and whatever way he comes, I'm going to have an opportunity. So it's more or less putting yourself in the position to where no matter which way he goes, you're going to have a chance.
I gotcha. Yeah, because I just have not done much, if any, in the woods turkey hunting. I'm always playing that field edge game, which is a nightmare if the roost doesn't work out for you, because once they're in a field, it's pretty ironclad for a bird. I mean, there's a reason they spend all day every day in there, and it's not because the advantage is yours, I think, for sure. So that makes a lot of sense, though. Just try to get yourself where you need to be and let him do the rest.
Yeah, and trust me, there's been more times than not where they've been in that field and they did not come in. You know what I mean? Like, that's just, especially on public ground where they've been called from that spot and they know that field's safe. There's been times where I've wasted 2 hours and they'll gobble their head off, but they're not coming in there. Yeah. So you do find yourself in that situation a lot. Luckily, that turkey I killed, you know, it was 45 minutes after pitch down. He was still fired up.
Yeah.
Early enough in the season where maybe he hadn't been messed with that much. And I still think that the way that I was calling, he probably hadn't heard much of.
Yeah.
You know, not I'm a national champion turkey caller, but I just don't think a lot of people go with the scratching in the leaves, you know, trying to mimic a turkey in that way. And so I do think that that helped.
Yeah.
But yeah, trust me, the pasture turkeys, man, they've caused me a lot of headache. And that's just time I was able to coax them in a little bit.
Hey, I like it. You got to claim every victory you've got. You know, you got to talk about that stuff. I have people say to me all the time when they're telling stories, they'll say, like, one thing I like to do is this, this, and this. And you're like, that you had to have done that one time. There's no way this is a thing you actually like to do. So I like your honesty. Just it worked this time.
That's the joy about turkey hunting, man, is it's none of it is, you know, the same. It's gathering the knowledge to where, you know, there's a million different situations, but you have the knowledge of being like, okay, I've been in this situation before. This is probably what I need to do. It's always trying to put the puzzle pieces together. And yeah, you and I could talk about every single turkey we've killed and they're all going to be different, you know, as far as the turkey itself and the mood and the weather and the topography and the diversity, you know, you could go on and on and on. And so to me, that's the fun part about it, is there's really no right and wrong way as far as telling somebody how to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, everything can work once. So there's, I mean, there's general rules, but nothing is like, this is it. It's so funny because, like, on all my social media pages, the number of turkey experts out there is shocking. Like, it's amazing there's a single turkey alive, because everybody who comments knows the best way to turkey hunt, and everybody else, by their opinion, is just a complete idiot. So it's amazing, man. I'm just honored that these people are even looking at my lowly content, but you know, it is what it is.
you can't make anybody happy anymore, man. And I just stick to each their own, and I just do my own thing, you know?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Easy to criticize, and you know, I could go after all the reapers and all that, but I just, you know, hey, works for them. That's great, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. If, you know, if it's a legal thing and you like to do it and you're not wiping out populations, I mean, how much is it really hurting things? And everybody's got their own opinions, like you said. I think that a lot of people, you know, to get more into the philosophical, we're so quick to condemn everybody else, but we just have unlimited grace for ourselves somehow. And I don't think that that's really healthy.
No, I mean, think 40 years ago, what would the old men be saying about us just with our camouflage and chokes and $70 shells? I mean, they would be saying that we're completely unethical. You know, times change, tactics change, hunting changes. And I get it. I mean, I'm only 36 and things are all way different than they used to be. But that doesn't mean that it has to be bad. You know, I may not agree with that, but I'm not going to go tell somebody they can't do it. You know, we can still disagree on how we hunt, but still love to hunt and have a brotherhood and a camaraderie in the same breath. You know, it's kind of ridiculous. Yeah. How people get so bent out of shape about stuff, but that's just the world we live in.
Yeah. I think that's so good, man. And I think one thing I try to do is I try to just pick one group of people at random that I've never met and decide I'm just going to make fun of them always. And they're not, I don't even interact with them. So it's fine. if you really need to get it out, you know. Yeah, but man, that's so true. So that was your first bird this year. What about your second bird? How did that one unfold?
Oh, yeah, so the second one, I continued to hit all my spots on the Mark Twain and was striking out again. So it was more of the same, just 20,000 steps a day, trying to hit some new places. I continued to run into people, hind up turkeys, rain, and I was getting to where I was getting burned out. My wife was like, you can do it, because I was getting pretty like, man, this is getting to be where it's a job and not fun. So I knew I was getting close, whereas like, okay, it's time to either take a couple mornings off, or we got to do something way different here. So there's a little piece of public south of where I live here that I have deer hunted a lot in the past, but nobody likes to hunt it because there's walking trails all around there. And so it kind of gets overlooked, reasonably so. I mean, it's not the best hunting in the world, but there are pockets, you know, and deer hunting back there in the past, which I have an e-bike, which are legal on those trails. I'm like, hey, I can zip back, which I didn't have that day. So I actually walked it, but just from hunting back there and having that e-bike, I knew that there was at least turkey sign back there in the fall. And so I went to where our deer hunted, and sure enough, there's a bunch of turkeys, but those turkeys remained on private. And so, didn't get anything that morning. I had to go to work. So the next morning I said, hey, I'm going to give it one more chance. I'm going to go back to that spot. Maybe I can call those birds similar to how I killed the first one. Maybe I can get one to break off, get them across the line and shoot them in the woods. Didn't happen. So I was pretty disgruntled, but it was like 7:30. I'm like, man, we're got like 5 days left. I've got to, I guess, stick it out, because I'm 45-minute walk in here. So I'm like, there's another ridge top over here. It's going to take me 40 minutes to get down and up this thing, but we'll go. And so I'm like you, I was sweating to death. I mean, pouring sweat, carrying everything up there. Sure enough, get to the top. It butts up to some private pasture. Had two turkeys gobble. I'm like, all right, here we go. So sit down. No sooner I got set down, I saw the redheads. I mean, I only called once. I mean, they were fire.
That's awesome, man.
Reasonably so, because as they got closer, I realized they were super jakes. So,
oh, no. Which
at that point in time, I was like, man, this may be good enough. Like, I don't care if you shoot a jake. I always wanted to kill gobblers. Like, that's just what I like to do.
Yeah.
And so I still thought about it, but I'm like, man, I'm not going to. And they sounded, I mean, their gobbles were impressive, because they fooled me. I'll say that. I don't know if it was wishful thinking at the time or what, but. Anyway, I played with them for a while, which actually I think helped me, because I worked down this point, probably 400 yards. I'm like, well, this point leads down to kind of another ridge that touches it, and there's a big pasture and pond. I said, maybe there's a turkey over there. I'll go check it, and then I'm going to start heading out. It was probably 9:30 or 10. Sure enough, when I got over that ridge and walked to the end of that point, that bird may have heard those other jakes gobbling because it was close enough, or maybe I just hit him at the right time. But I started calling, and he gobbled, and he was probably 400 yards on private. I'm like, well, might as well sit here and try it, you know? So I did the scratching in the leaves as loud as I could to try to generate that interest like the last turkey. And man, he was gobbling good, but I couldn't get him to break. And so I kind of kept going down that spine before it dropped all the way off, which is essentially a cliff. I'm like, man, maybe he'll come up here. Like, this is the only chance I got. I could not go any farther to my left where he was at, because that was all private. So I'm about 100 yards off the fence line. I don't like to sit on a fence post and shoot a turkey. So right. I always try to stay off, but, you know, remain respectful. So I'm like, I'm just going to sit here and do the putt per scratch, you know, just be that sweet hen up here, not go crazy. And sure enough, after 10 or 15 minutes, and I, you know, when I scratch, I don't just sit in one spot and wear it out. I mean, I'm walking up and down that ridge. I'm zigzagging. So I sound like a turkey just, you know, scratching like crazy up there. And not saying that that's what the reason was, but he broke. And I noticed he was going down these two ridges, kind of turns into a little creek bottom where there's a creek. I said, maybe he'll go down to the bottom. So I was about to bail off in there to the bottom. And I'm like, well, I'm going to stop at the end of this point before bailing off this hill and call one more time. Because he'd kind of shut up for about 5 minutes. And I thought maybe he was working to that bottom to try to meet me halfway or something. But I was like, hey, the old patience thing, I'm like, let's just stop one more time. Let's call and see where he's at. So then we can look at my Onyx, kind of get a game plan together here. And thank goodness, man, because I called and he was 40 yards right over that lip. And I was like, oh, my goodness. So I found a tree that was about this big around, because I had no time. So I just sat down with my face mask up and got my gun up. And of course, like I was telling you earlier, those turkeys don't just come down the barrel very often, which he went around that point and came up on my right side, and I saw his head at probably 20 yards. Oh. And man, what, you know, I'm dead to rights basically. But luckily he was looking, and I noticed there was a cedar tree probably about this big around. I said, if he gets his head behind that, that's my only chance to swing, you know? And sure enough, he put his head behind that, and I just had to swing, you know, pretty quick from about here to here. So it wasn't a huge drastic move, but it was, you know, feed, head, boom, and was able to pull that off. And he rolled all the way down the hill 200 yards, but It was a crazy, I don't know, man, when you work that hard and you finally get one and it works out like that and it's that high pressure moment, man, it was a good feeling for sure.
Oh, dude, there's nothing in the world like it. That's why we make challenges for ourselves, right? Is to overcome them. And I think that's something that's very human, is we find a way to challenge ourselves, or our brain decides to challenge us with very normal things. So you either can go out and face the challenge on your terms, or it will find you. And I love that, man. You just go out there and that feeling is second to none, man.
Well, it's like everybody says, every good thing worth doing is hard to do. You know, it's just, it can be really hard, you know, but that just makes it all more worth the while when it actually comes together. Like you said, that's the reason we do it, is it's the feeling of success and, you know, having to work hard for something. And until you do it, you know, a lot of people, even my wife, she's like, I don't know why you get up and do this, you know, 8 days in a row. Like,
yeah,
I'm glad you got turkey. I'm just like, it's hard to explain, you know, but it is a great feeling for sure.
Yeah, you have to be a little bit insane. I think that all my favorite people are at least a little bit insane, because otherwise it's just way too boring, man. You got to have a little bit of that. And it's unexplainable, you know, like just going through, as much as we've traveled and as many people as I've met, there's like a handful of people that I know are the same as me, as far as just obsessed with the outdoors in whatever way they can get it. And I mean, there's a reason there's only a handful, is because it doesn't make any sense. If it was, you know, it's like the saying, if it was easy, everybody would do it. If it was like, that's why there's more people at a theme park than there'll ever be in the turkey woods. It's because there's an easy type of fun that everybody's going to do, even me, right? But then there's those things that are just absolutely worth it, that are just something you don't get into just doing normal stuff, man.
Well, and hunting is such an investment, and it's such a craft that, you know, I think it truly takes a lifetime, you know, to get good at, or to, you know, even get where we're at now. You don't just go out and do. And so you build a lot of respect for it, and really even for yourself, if you can go from a brand new hunter and stick with it through years of misery like I had to, especially in turkey woods. You know, and get yourself to where you can tag out every year. Like, it almost becomes an identity that most of the time you should be proud of. And I certainly am proud of, because it's like, hey, I stuck with it. I didn't know how to use a turkey call. I didn't kill a turkey for my first 4 years by myself. I had people take me, but you know, I had to really learn everything the hard way to this, be able to do what I do now. And I still screw up, but you know, I guess my point of all that, like you said, is that it is a craft, and it, you know, it becomes a who you are, and you can identify with people that share that obsession. You can pick them out. You know, you're at a party, or you're at a dinner or whatever, and they start talking hunting. You can immediately be like, okay, me and this guy's going to be on the same page.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's not to be ignored, the biological part of it. I mean, like, when you think about just in our DNA, like this idea that DNA has memory, there's a lot of stuff about that right now. But like, humans have been hunting forever. Like, as long as we've been human, we've been hunting. And I think that, man, we get out here and, you know, you get on your phone and then you go work on a computer and you go get stuck in traffic. That's all brand new stuff. Brand new stuff for a human. You go out and hunt, and that's something that we've been doing forever. And that's part of the reason I get driven so crazy when people act like hunting is weird. I'm like, no, what's weird is driving a car. People have not been driving a car. That's one of the strangest things you can do. Like, I'm reminded of one time I was listening to a podcast with Steve Rinella, and he said people always ask him what's the weirdest thing he's ever eaten, because, you know, he's a big hunter and he likes to eat every part of the animal and all that stuff. And he says Cool Ranch Dorito. Like, without a doubt, that's the weirdest thing. Where did that come from? What is that? You know, and I think that it's like that with hunting. It's like, what's the weirdest thing you've ever done hunting? It's like, well, drove a car to do it. Like, that's what's weird. Using my phone for maps, which I love and I'm not saying anything against, but that's way more foreign than actually getting out there and hunting. And, you know, when you let yourself get out there and just be, and you feel that triumph, you can feel the weight behind it of, like, there's something deep inside you that just perks up in a way that it mostly doesn't get to in our normal lives.
Well, and people can't fathom. Yeah, I mean, you're right. It's so far removed from our society now that, yeah, people do not. I mean, people could listen to this and be like, I don't know what you guys are talking about. And they never would or will until they go. And talking them into going is slim to none, you know? So it's just like, it continues to separate itself, and the hunting community is in itself big, but when you look at the population, it's not. But you know, yeah, people just don't understand. You're right. I think that's why barbecue tastes so good, because it's cooked over an open fire, like we used to cook food. You know, I could go on a tangent about the same thing you're talking about, but there is a very visceral and emotional feeling. You know, whether that be somber and excitement, adrenaline, I mean, really a mixed bag of emotions when you kill a deer or a turkey or any type of animal, you know, it is an emotion that you can't explain. And I think there's a lot to that. You know, even my wife, she's not an outdoorsman, and, you know, she's getting a little better now, being with me, but I mean, I took her bow fishing for the first time, and she always just never understood why that was so much fun. And even bow fishing, we took her, and she's like, I could do this. I'm see, you know, and she's like, I just didn't realize. And, you know, I just think that's a perfect analogy for, you know, everybody that just, you know, doesn't understand. It's like, just, you know, give it a chance. You know, you'd be like, be surprised.
Yeah. My brother-in-law is the same way. He would fish. He's never even been interested in the idea of hunting, like wouldn't ever even entertain it. Not against it, not anything. He's just like, I'll be too bored. And I'm like, man, come turkey hunting. You won't be that bored. And he's like, no, I will. And I'm like, well, so we went bow fishing together for the first time. Like, he was with me. We went with some friends of his, and he's gotten so hooked on it now that he has his own boat and he's got the whole thing dialed. And that's what we take when we go bow fishing, because he just loves it so much. Cause it's, I mean, it's such an easy entry because it's fast action. You get lots of shots, lots of targets, and you're taking out invasives. And it's just like, you just feel good, man. It just feels good to be dialed like that. Yeah,
it's a gateway drug. I mean, exactly like that. It's action packed, which honestly is why I fell in love with turkey hunting so much as a younger adult, you know, with probably lacking some patience and wanting instant gratification. It was something you could go out and at least hear a turkey, you know, and you can run around and you can be active. Yeah. And so I think I can't think of many people who would go turkey hunting and say that they were bored, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I think if I would have turkey hunted first, I would never be the deer hunter that I am right now. Like, I just don't think I would have, because when I first started deer hunting, honestly, I don't know why I would even go, because like, I would get so nervous at the idea of shooting a deer. I would just get out there and my heart rate would just be up for like 3 hours while we're out there. I was just like freaked out.
That's pretty rough.
Dude, it was rough. It was like every time I'd even think about it, I'd get like sick, like just this, I don't know what it is, just the yips. I think, I don't know. It's just something that I had going for a long time. And, you know, I shot a few deer or whatever, but the day that I became like, I'm going to be a deer hunter forever was I had hunted this spot, you know, and I came from the legitimate 5 gallon bucket, set on the ground, sit on the 5 gallon bucket. This is my spot. I will hunt this every day of gun season, and then I will never hunt again. Wind, nothing. Weather, nothing. Food patterns, nothing. Bedding areas, no. Just bucket in this corner of the field with my 30-30. And I sat that like 11 days and didn't see anything. So the next year, and I'd started listening to like podcasts and stuff, and I heard somebody say like, hey, you should hunt every day like it's your last day of season. If stuff's not going for you, you need to make changes. Like, don't just get out there. And man, it hit me. So I go out first day of season. I saw nothing. And I was like, okay, we're done. Yep. I'm leaving the bucket. Well, I'm taking the bucket with me and I'm going somewhere else. So I moved spots. Right at last light, this fawn comes out of the woods, like 20 yards from me, and she's staring right at me, and it made me so uncomfortable. I busted out laughing because it was so strange that this deer was staring at me. And so the next day I'm like, okay, if I move to the other side of this woods, maybe she'll come out sooner. Cause I had zero restrictions on shooting. Well, I moved to the other side of this woods. I'm like, I've upgraded to a chair now. I'm like hacking away at these branches and going to set my chair up. And I turn around and there stands like, well, this buck right here behind me, this 8-point. And I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this. So I took a knee, put my gun on my chair, and I shot this deer at like 3:20 in the afternoon on like November, what would it have been, 18th or something, or 15th. And it was like 70 degrees that day for some reason. And I loaded that deer up into the truck, field dressed it all by myself. And I was like, okay. I was hooked from then on, because that was my hunt. I went to that spot. Like, Dad suggested it. He was like, hey, maybe you should hunt here. But I made the move and I made it happen. And I was like, oh, you can like go out. And I was like, man, I've never felt more like a man. Like I'm in my grandpa's manual transmission. I only stalled it out 4 times trying to load that deer. It was fine. You know, it was great.
Well, dude, that's, you know, I have my daughter's 4.5, almost 5, but you know, looking back when I was younger, the confidence that it can build, you know, doing exactly like you said, it's not being scared to suck at something, you know, anything new in life, you're just not going to be good at. And that holds a lot of people back. And the same can be said for hunting. You know, I didn't like the idea of hunting out of a saddle, but I started to do it, you know, and I was not good at it. I blew some hunts, but you know, now I'm pretty good at it. And it's getting that mentality of like, hey, you know, this is going to be rough. You know, hunting public land for the first year is going to be really rough, but I know in 3 or 4 years, I'm going to be a lot better. So it's willing to go through all those pains to where you get to the point. Maybe if you got a little lucky, you know, you kill a nice buck or kill a turkey, like the sense of accomplishment and the confidence you get out of that, you're like, oh yeah, like now I got, you know, now next year. And like, it just keeps piling on. And that's what I was talking about earlier. It can really change your identity.
Yeah, and it does.
So I'm excited with my daughter to start getting her. It's almost like sports. You know, you want to play sports, not just to be good at sports or basketball, because the lessons that it teaches.
Yes.
I think hunting is like the perfect analogy for all of that. Unfortunately, a lot of kids don't get to experience, or even adults.
Yeah, it's true, man. It teaches you to be good at life. And, you know, case in point, I shot this buck. I mean, it was all luck. I mean, that entire story, complete luck. I look back now and I understand why that deer was there and why I got it and all of that. But it was all like, it was 4 years before I shot another buck. I had, because I had no idea how to hunt actually. And that field just happened to be planted in like an incredible crop for those deer. And then it never was again. So I had to basically then learn from the ground up after having success, but I stuck with it because of that. And like years later, I decided to start kayak fishing. And I remember the first time I took my kayak out, I bought a $90 kayak off of Marketplace and a $10 paddle. And the first place I took it out on was Lake Huron on the Georgian Bay. I think it's Georgian. I think that's how you say it. And the waves were like white capping, and I'm going to go out for the first time in this kayak. And I get out past like the breakers kind of, well, not past the breakers, but past the windbreak. And I start hitting these waves, and I immediately was so scared. And I said to myself, hey, if you stop now, you're never going to do this. So you got to find a way to do it. And then, you know, after a little while, I start to realize, wow, kayaks are built to be incredibly stable in waves, especially like a little 10 footer or whatever. And I ended up catching my personal best northern pike and walleye and smallmouth that week. Like, it was just incredible. And, you know, like you're saying, that builds that confidence and it builds that self-reliance. And man, turkey hunting, the same thing. Going out in the woods in the dark by yourself, hearing weird sounds and weird sights, like, it's not fun like that, but it builds you into a different person, and that momentum builds. The more times you say, hey, I'm not going to let fear stop me, I'm not going to let lack of knowledge stop me, I'm going to get out there and do it, then you find that success, and that builds to more success and more success in all levels.
Well, resilience is a muscle, man. I mean, it's something that has to be built. And if you're going to, you know, if you're going to hunt, inevitably you're going to have to build some resilience. You're going to have to have a little bit of grit, you know, especially the types of ways we have to hunt. You know, now I'm sure there's setups where, you know, there's nice redneck blinds and it's, you know, maybe a little bit more easier. And man, that's awesome. I wish I had that opportunity.
Right.
But if you're going to, you know, do what we have to do, like, there's going to be some bad days. There's going to be bad weeks. I mean, just as I was explaining to you, it was raining on me. I was walking 20,000 steps a day, still trying to work, like, do all this stuff. And it got to a point where it was really hard. But, you know, hunting is hard. You know, it's supposed to be. That's why you get out of it what you get out of it. And that's why it's so exciting. So, yeah, you have to push yourself a little bit to continue to get better if you want to be better, you know, and you got to be. You can't be scared to make mistakes or push past your boundaries or, you know, walk an extra 45 minutes around whatever to do it. You know, you learn that, like, okay, this is going to be hard, but this probably is what's necessary.
Yeah. You know, man.
And it's putting that muscle to realize that, like, that's just life. Life's going to be hard. I don't care if it's hunting what it is. And if you don't have a little bit of resiliency and grit to get through those hard times, man, you're going to struggle to push yourself in any aspect of life.
That's the truth, man. Resiliency is a key part of all of this. I think that's such a great note to wrap it up on, man. Man, I can't thank you enough for being on the podcast. It's been an absolute blast to talk with you. And for all of you guys listening at home, thank you so much for listening. That means the world to me. It keeps this podcast alive. If you get a chance, if you can leave me a 5-star review, that would help this podcast tremendously. You can also follow me on social media. I'm on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok. I've got a Gmail account. It is howtohuntturkey@gmail.com. You can send me an email with any thoughts. I would love to see something other than TikTok notifications in there, which I did unsubscribe from. So now I'm just ready for your emails. So send me an email, and man, take somebody hunting with you this week.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.